He's back at it again. Earlier this week, we saw the vice presidential debate, Tim Walz and J.D. Vance, duking it out with words on the CBS stage over in New York. And I got to say, I believe that it was kind of blah, right? I mean, I thought that they covered a lot of topics, but they didn't talk about any of the big topics. I mean, they did talk about some big topics, but I don't know that the big topics that they covered, which we'll get to, are really going to matter all that much. Unless we've been being completely lied to, which is, of course, very possible. So let's get going. Stick with us. Don't go away. We start now. Hello, everyone, and welcome here to another episode of The Richard Leonard Show. I'd like to thank you for joining us. As always, it's been a wonderful experience. All of us here at the studio, we have all really enjoyed watching this show grow, the whole network grow, and so we appreciate your participation in everything that we're doing. Before we get started, I know that you won't mind me talking to you about how the show is made possible. That's Cortez Wealth Management. Get yourselves on over to AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com. Sign up for the webinar. It happens on Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let Carlos Cortez and his staff help you to put together a tax-free retirement plan. Once you have gone through the webinar and gotten all the information, if you have any comments or questions and or concerns, just let them know. Give them a call, email, whatever is best for you, and let them help you get over those hurdles. So, AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com, get on over there. They're waiting to hear from you. All right, so the VP debate. It was quite an interesting ordeal. It was a little blah, like I said before. I thought there was going to be more fireworks. I thought there was going to be a little more spatting, if you will. But there wasn't. And I guess to a certain respect, I'm a little okay with it being a little blah, because some of the things that they did talk about, they actually did provide good information. I think that you got to see a little bit from both candidates that might be helpful to make a decision about who to vote for if you are a person that's on the fence about who you're going to select in November. But we heard about inflation. We heard about the economy. We heard about energy. Well, we didn't really hear about energy until Vance's closing statements. But we heard a lot of policy stuff, which I think a lot of people are would consider that important. But I don't feel like we heard enough about our open borders. I think J.D. Vance brought it up quite a few times. But they never really had a structured conversation around it, I didn't feel like. And so part of me wonders if this was all part of the discussion, right? The discussion before the debate. Did both sides have to come together some way or another and discuss terms? Yeah, we could talk about this, but not about that. Well, I don't know. I think we should talk about that, but let's agree not to talk about this over here instead. And that part I don't agree with. I think that if you are a person who is putting your name on a ballot for any elected office, for that matter, you should be held accountable and taken to task about whatever it is that they seem to dig up on you and bring up at a debate or a town hall in any open forum and have to answer for it one way or another. And at this current point, what I'm talking about is the infestation or infiltration, I suppose is a better word, of our country. And so all these conversations about the economy, all these conversations about healthcare, all these conversations about everything that they discussed, none of it really means a whole lot if we're being invaded, does it? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm way off base. But it would seem to me, from the little bit of military training I had in my 19 years in the United States Army, that you do a threat assessment, right? And you try to pick out where your threats are, which ones are the biggest maybe, and then you prioritize those threats. And you come up with a battle plan, some kind of strategy to deal with each of those threats in the best way possible, given the manpower, the equipment, the assets, and the resources that you have. And so, sure, fertility issues, abortion, that's a big deal. The economy, big deal. Healthcare in general, big deal. Inflation, part of the economy, also a big deal. There's a lot of stuff that's a big deal. But the question is, how big of a deal will all those things be? Drug prices. How big of a deal will all those things be when we're fighting off an infiltration? And my question is there a battle plan? Is there a plan to deal with all of this malarkey so that we can get to a place where things like inflation, the economy, abortion, healthcare, all whatever, you name it, to where those can be top priority? Because although very important topics, in my opinion, not top priority. I think when we have issues going on in this country that are going to hinder the lives, the progress, and what they also mentioned many times, the attainment of that American dream, those are the things that we probably should be addressing first. And now I understand that other things are important too, but what's more important? So for example, and this one's going to cause a ruckus probably. But what is more important? The decision whether or not you can have an abortion in your home state, or the fact that your home state / country may not even be able to facilitate medical care at all soon. What's more important? What is the more important topic to tackle first? And I mean, my heart goes out to these ladies. They talked about one who passed away going back and forth from her home state to, I think it was North or South Carolina, to get care and have an abortion or whatever it was she had going on. That's tragic. It's really tragic. Think about it this way. when I was working for a member of Congress, I worked for a member of Congress for a couple of years. I took part in what is, I believe it's still going actually, the Wounded Warrior Program through the House of Representatives. And what that is they take disabled veterans and they give them a two-year fellowship with a participating member of Congress, and you go and work for them as a staffer in whatever capacity they have open for you. Usually, it's you usually stay in the district in whatever state they represent, and you perform casework and do some outreach. You learn the process, you gain some contacts, and you help a lot of people, or at least you have the potential to. And what I learned in that couple of years that I did that job, after my fellowship was over, we deployed again. I went on my second deployment, I don't know, maybe 2 months after my fellowship was over. But what I learned was that the United States government will not act on things in general, generally speaking, unless it impacts a pretty large number of American citizens. So, for example, we would have people come to our office here in Minnesota, come to the congressman's office, and they would complain about, let's just pick a topic. We had an oil refinery in the district. They would complain about the oil refinery and its pollution and all these other things. And so in conversations with the powers that be on Capitol Hill as it pertains to pollution and oil refineries and all these things, the consensus was, well, it just doesn't affect enough Americans for the House of Representatives to take action. The congressman isn't going to take up legislation. The House of Representatives, aka the federal government, isn't going to take up any kind of special action because it does not affect enough Americans to warrant the time it would take to investigate, talk to people, draft legislation, present it to committee, and go through the whole process. And so as far as the congressional members are concerned, that issue's dead in the water. Now, these people certainly have the option to call the EPA, for example, file a complaint, and hopefully something comes of it there. But they're just not really going to, the congressman wasn't going to do anything. He wasn't really allowed, is kind of how I took it. But here we have other topics such as abortion, which is a huge topic for many people all over this country. So people are going to jump all over it. The House of Representatives are going to jump all over it. This illegal immigration thing is a huge topic. But for some reason, it doesn't appear that the United States government is jumping all over it to stop it. To stop the incoming people, to stop the threat, and then eliminate whatever threat is here by mass deportations, if that's what it takes. Whatever. People are going to fight. People are going to, I'm sure there'll be shootouts, there'll be fights, there'll be all kinds of chaos when and if they ever decide to get these millions of people the hell out of our country so that we can continue to try to just make a better day for ourselves and our families. But these topics didn't get covered in the debate. They didn't get covered in the presidential debate. Not really. And I wonder why. And my theory on this is my theory on this is that it's ugly. It's ugly. It's scary. It's grim. It's dark. And nobody wants to scare the American people. We don't want to scare anybody. But we've talked about on this show many times what the reality is. And sometimes I wish that we in high spaces and high spots on ivory perches in government, that they would just stop with all this sensitive hand-holding, sensitive word bullshit. And just tell it like it really is. I believe that they don't want to talk about it because it's dark. It's scary. It's not pleasant. Six, seven, maybe 8 months ago, Jason Ose and I, we had a conversation on the show about what war really looks like. What really happens? And I don't know that we got super graphic, but I know that we told the truth. But I don't think that our government believes, or at least the powers that control the messaging, I don't think that they believe that the American people can handle it, or on the flip side of that coin, they know the American people can maybe handle it, but they don't want to answer questions about it. In either way you slice it, it's a bad deal. It's a bad deal for us. Because at the end of the day, and hopefully I'm 1,000% wrong about this, but at the end of the day, it's going to get bloody. People are going to die. People are going to get hurt. Buildings and homes and neighborhoods all kinds of stuff. Things are going to get destroyed. We're going to be low on supplies. It's going to be hard to find shit. It's not going to be a good time, but at the same time, it must happen some way, somehow. Maybe it doesn't have to be bloody. Maybe it doesn't have to be dark. Maybe it doesn't have to be scary. But I suppose that'll depend on the people who are here illegally that need to go home. Maybe they'll be given a chance to peacefully just gather your things, including whatever free shit the United States of America government gave you, and kindly leave. Hope you had a good vacation. Now collect your shit and get stepping. But I don't believe that that'll happen. I believe that one side of our government will continue to foster this behavior because they believe it'll get them votes. They believe it'll get them power. It'll keep them in the seats that they sit in today. And maybe they're right. Maybe there are just enough, I'm not going to use that word, maybe there are just enough people in this country that buy into that. Maybe there are just enough folks roaming around our neighborhoods and think that I'm safe. We're good. We're good here. They'll never find us here, wherever you're at. They'll never find us here. Don't worry. The police will handle it. And if it gets too bad, then the government will call in the military. They'll take care of it. And all the while, there's real people dying. There's real people being thrust into hard times and homelessness. There's real people that can't eat. There's real people that don't work. They can't. But then you got all these, was it somebody the other day, snowflakes, call them snowflakes. There's these snowflakes just milling around. Well, we're good. We're good. It's no big deal. And then we sit down and we watch this vice presidential debate, and especially here in Minnesota, we see our governor, who we already know before he gets on the stage that he's a dipshit. And he gets on there and he talks about how he's made friends with school shooters, finally admits that he lied about the being in China in 89 at Tiananmen Square. Well, I just got my dates mixed up. But I was there that year. But I got my dates mixed up. Son of a bitch, if you were there, if you were there, you would know you were there. You're not mixing that up. Yeah, maybe you were there later in the summer. But we don't have the tough conversation with the American people. It doesn't happen. We heard not one thing about the thousands and thousands of people who have lost everything to this hurricane. This hurricane that made it all the way up to South Carolina and somewhere in southern Missouri even. Strongest storm of the ages, I heard someone say on X. We didn't talk about that. Nobody talked about the plan for that, to rebuild that. Meanwhile, there's people all over the southern part of our country who have lost everything. And they're stranded in the mountains of North Carolina with no power, no water, no food, no fuel. They're stuck. They're all going to die. And it wasn't until, what was it, Wednesday? This last Wednesday, finally, Joe Biden crawls out of his little cardboard box tree fort in his footy jammies to send soldiers. A thousand American soldiers to help the victims of this storm. Finally, on Wednesday, when the storm hit the Thursday prior. What is going on? How can what I don't understand, what I don't understand about any of this is how anybody who follows these people can honestly say, without a shadow of a doubt, that they believe that they're doing a good job. A week from this last Thursday to this last Wednesday, 5 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 7 days. It took you 7 days to send Americans help. And here's the other weird thing. Do me a favor, everyone, and throw on a tinfoil hat real quick. Did we know that in parts of North Carolina, allegedly, parts of North Carolina have among the world's leading spots for the richest the richest places of quartz, and there was one other mineral or something that just so happened to be used to make batteries and parts and things for electric vehicles. Right where all the flooding is, in the mountains. Now, also allegedly, in the past 3 or 4 months, the community in the mountains of North Carolina have been trying to fend off all these rich folks that want to buy up land and start mining these minerals, quartz, and I forget what the other one is. But both of these things are very, very important for building electric vehicles. And as we start entering a space where people want to start making electric planes, electric helicopters, electric boats, everything electric. It's real interesting that that's the place that gets hit and flooded with a hurricane. And also, not too long ago, the community's fighting big business to keep them the hell out of there. Because once you start mining this stuff, apparently it's nasty. You can't live there. But here's the other kicker. These folks all live in the mountains of North Carolina. In the mountains. A place where flood insurance isn't a thing. They say most everybody, if not everybody, is without flood insurance. Which means they're not going to be able to rebuild. They won't be able to afford it. Insurance ain't going to cover it. They've lost everything. Any of them that had any livestock or crops, and that's how they made a living, it's all gone. Okay, you can take off your tinfoil hat now. I just found all that to be interesting, and I know that we've talked on the show also before, not too long ago, about the idea that there really is no such thing as a coincidence. Did we ever hear, by the way, keep your tinfoil hat handy, but did we ever hear, by the way, whatever happened with all that property in Hawaii that was hit with a supposed laser beam from space? Did Oprah end up owning all of that land? I don't know. But get this also. It was just Wednesday or Thursday. I saw on, I think it was probably X, that in Las Vegas, weirdly enough, Las Vegas has been chosen as the first site to build a space launch airport, a space launch port to launch space planes. So, just to recap quickly, and then we'll go to a break. Hurricane comes in. Biggest hurricane we've seen in a long time. Done more damage, they say, hands down, than Katrina did. Hits southern Missouri all the way up from the coast. Shifts to go back out to the ocean and just ravishes North Carolina. All the mountain communities in the holler. Small towns. Destroyed. Gone. Flooded. Flooded in places where people have never seen floods. Therefore, they don't own flood insurance. Their whole way of life, gone. Homes, gone. Livestock, gone. family members potentially dead or missing, community members up in the mountains. Nobody's heard from them or seen from them in days, and it makes sense because there's no power, there's no water, there's no food, there's no cell service, there's no internet for sure. There's no way to communicate. And 7 days later, old Sleepy Joe leaves his refrigerator box fort and his little teddy bear footy jammies to tell the military, hey, take 1,000 guys, go down there and clean this thing up. Meanwhile, folks, meanwhile, the civilian population of this country has come together. They've donated money, they've donated food, they've donated water, they've sent equipment. Private pilots with their own aircraft, i.e. helicopters, are trying to fly and get folks out, but are being told by local law enforcement, if you fly up there, you'll be arrested when you come back. It's a no-fly zone. But the government's not there to save these people. FEMA wasn't on the ground. So, are we just supposed to leave our community members, our friends, our family members? We're supposed to leave them up there to die? Folks are riding horses up the mountain. That's where we're at in this country. Meanwhile, we're having a vice presidential debate. We're bitching about things. Imagine being one of these people on the side of a mountain. You've just lost everything. And someone asks you, hey, did you catch the debate? Imagine someone's going to get slapped right in the mouth. Where the hell are our people? Where the hell are our assets? Where the hell are Americans? Well, I think what we saw in this instance is that the Americans, the ones that actually still love this country, were doing everything they can to try to help those people who have been displaced, have lost everything, in many cases, have lost their lives. Oh, and by the way, Donald Trump showed up there. Not only did he show up there, but he brought a ton of pizza, brought a bunch of water, and then started a GoFundMe account that made millions of dollars to go to the victims of the storm. Joe Biden was still playing Connect Four in his little baby bear jammies. I don't understand how anybody can think that this guy is doing anything other than a horseshit job. We'll be right back. Hey folks, welcome back here to the second half of the show. Before we continue, I do owe you an apology. I was wrong about the quartz in North Carolina. Turns out quartz is produced in a lot of places. There's a lot of it in Minnesota. We make countertops out of it, but it's lithium. Lithium is the resource that is plentiful, very plentiful in North Carolina. And I got a little excerpt here to read to you. The King Mountain Mine is in North Carolina. And it says here, the mine is located on one of the world's richest spodumene ore deposits and is owned by Albemarle, the world's largest lithium producer. The mine was idled in the early 1990s, but Albemarle is seeking approval to reopen it. The mine could produce enough lithium to make 1.2 million electric vehicles annually. In September of 2023, so just a little over a year ago, the U.S. Department of Defense awarded Albemarle a $90 million grant to help reopen the mine. So, keeping those tinfoil hats handy, it's all just kind of suspicious. And then also, to add to the already strained resources of this country, our ports close. The longshore workers go on strike. And maybe for good reason. I guess I don't know enough about it, but it seems that when they renegotiated their last contract, they were told that these ports would not be automated. And then they were automated. Well, now they're up for renegotiation, and they're holding, the union is holding these people to task. You told us you weren't going to do this, and you did it, and we want a pay increase. And they weren't lying about it. So now they're not working. And what they say is that for every day, our ports from Maine to Texas, all the way down the East Coast, for every day they're closed, we go another 4 to 6 days behind. Another 4 to 6 days behind getting materials, getting water, getting food, getting goods all over this country. What's that going to do for the folks that were just ravished by a hurricane? They're going to need things. But there isn't going to be any to be had. We didn't hear about that at the debate. And maybe that's not the appropriate forum. But I guess I kind of figured that, like, we're currently sitting in this pile of shit. Does anybody care to talk about how we plan to help these people? Because up until that point, last Tuesday, we still haven't had any government assets to be down there helping anybody. FEMA wasn't on the ground. Military people were awaiting Title 10 orders to be able to get their hands dirty and go to work. The local community and people from all over this country put their lives on hold to travel there to ask where they could be of assistance. And that's the America that I'd like to foster. The America that comes together in times of need. Do you think that anybody, let me ask you this. Do you think that anybody who lost everything to this hurricane, to this storm, to reports of looters allegedly that were illegal migrants looting people as they're collecting the last of their lives that have been scattered all over the place from a storm? Do you think that anybody that is a victim or anybody that means well by going to help, do you think anybody's doing so based on the color of skin? Do you think that anybody's doing any of that based on sexual orientation? Do you think anybody's doing that based on the fact of whether or not you like your wiener or not? Do you think anybody's doing any of those things for each other because of what political party they choose to side with and why? Or are they maybe just doing it because we're Americans? And that's what we do. We help our neighbors. We lift them up in times of need. Isn't that what America's all about? Not this bullshit that we've been living through in the past few years? I would like to think that none of those things are happening. It may be a little naive of me to think that they're not. But I'm guessing that it doesn't matter much. It wouldn't for me. It wouldn't for a lot of other people that I associate with. I mean, why does any of that matter at any time? And here we have these two hunyucks standing on a stage talking about who's going to lead this country better. And at the very second they're running their mouths, Americans are suffering. And we know for sure that that's happening. Now, am I saying that they shouldn't have even been there and had a debate? No, I don't know that I'm saying that, but I'm a little miffed about the idea that none of it got talked about. We didn't hear any conversation about how we were going to keep our families and our kids safe. We did hear a discussion about schools. And Tim Walz asked America, do you want your kid's school to look like a fortified castle or something like that? And the answer to that is yes. Yes, I do, if that's what it takes. If that's what it takes to keep our children safe when they are outside the arms and view of their parents, then yes, make them look like fortified bunkers. That's a lot easier to explain to a child than having to explain to a child why their best friend got shot by another classmate, or why their best friend got killed by some psychopath who decided to walk into a school and just start sending rounds downrange. So yes, make them look like a fortified castle. Until we can do the right thing and protect our children. And I've been saying it on this effing show for 2 years now. Put qualified veterans in schools with the tools to make them safe and to protect our kids. Nothing else has worked. So, two things. Make them look like military bases. Card everybody that comes in there. Stop them at the sidewalk. We don't stop people inside the door. Now you're already in. Now you're already a threat. Put a guard shack out there, whatever you need to do. Stop them when they pull in the parking lot. What is your business here? Since we're in the business of printing money in America, give every parent of every child in each school their own school ID card. Have this with you when you pick up your child or you can't get them. Why is this such a hard concept? But I'll tell you one thing. You put four or five, maybe six qualified veterans and give them the equipment and the tools to make a school safe, they'll do it. And they'll come up with plans. They'll come up with evacuation plans. They'll come up with shelter-in-place plans. They'll come up with all kinds of things that'll really surprise you. And on top of all of that, on top of all of it, our kids will learn a little bit about military culture. They're understanding a little bit more about who secured their freedom. They might learn a little bit more about the history of this country as it pertains to the way that we fight and what it cost all those years ago to have what we have now. What do we have to lose? But again, we're worried about optics. What's it going to look like? We don't want to scare anybody. Well, I'm going to tell you what, guys. While we're worried about scaring people, and while we're worried about optics, and while we're worried about feelings and all this other crap, our fucking kids are dying. So who cares about the rest of that? Whatever you have to do, protect them. And I gotta say, I'm sure there'll be some snowflake parents, but I don't think there'll be a whole ton of parents that are gonna be super pissed off about the fact that their kids are safer when their parents can't be with them to protect them. And in fact, some of these children might just be safer at school than they are at home. And so, Tim Walz, you got kids free lunches and breakfast. Can you take the next step and protect them? Let's see you pull that one out of your hat. But see, all of this depends on are the puppeteers going to allow the puppets to do this stuff? Because what I've begun to learn, I think I learned it a long time ago, but what has become more clear is that people in high places, I don't know that they really care all that much about the onesie and twosie little ordeals. They care about the big picture, like we talked about earlier in the show. If it doesn't affect enough Americans, the government may or may not get involved. But many of you are probably going to say, well, tell that to the parents of any student that gets injured or killed at school by some psycho. You tell them that. And I would agree with you 1,000%. My next question would be, what is it really in this country that we hold most dear? What is most important to us? Because what I thought it was our kids, our elderly, people we love that may be sick and need help or care, our family, our friends, our coworkers, that we may be, that may be friends, our neighbors, our community. And does that align with what the government or these folks sitting up on the perches, ivory tower type people, what do they think is important? And do they just tell us how important our kids are? Do they just tell us how important our sick and our elderly and our communities are? Because that's what we want to hear, so we vote for them. And I believe that there are some people in offices and high places that do care. But unfortunately, they are the minority. And so I ask you this. After spending an hour and a half of your life, if you watched it, watching a vice presidential debate, do you feel any better about it? And as I said earlier in the show, I think that they covered some pretty big issues, but I don't think that they dove deep into the issues that could completely tumble all the other issues that they spoke about. And did they do that because of optics? Because it's not a pretty conversation. It doesn't hit you very softly in the fifis. Well, I'm here to tell you, the people infesting our country, they don't give a shit about your fifis. The people everywhere else in this world that mean to do us harm, they don't care about your fifis. Those people, they care about what they want. They care about their narrative. And I would venture to say that the people up on top, as usual, they care about their money, their power, and their control. Not about us little people. Not about us regular guys. Good night.
There's a whole bunch of stories that have to be dug into, rethought, reconsidered, and in some cases completely discarded.
As modern Americans, we've been spoon-fed this dumbed-down, cartoonish, simplified version of history. It's all fake. It's all bullshit. Everything that we have been taught is part of a self-serving narrative written by the people who will say and do anything to keep us on a leash. Now, this version of history, some big-name corrupt families like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and their many associates are credited over and over and over again with propelling human development. Throughout the late 18 and early 1900s, almost every major American city was burnt to the ground. What if we really are quite literally living atop the ashes of an advanced civilization that's been hidden from us for our entire lives?